Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's South Carolina Medicaid Work Requirement Press Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session, and you may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note this call is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn today's program over to Phyllis Jordan, Georgetown University. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for joining us today. We've got a really great lineup of speakers on this issue of the work requirement that's being proposed for South Carolina for parents who use Medicaid. Joan Alker will lead off. She's the Executive Director of the Center for Children and Families and a research professor at Georgetown University McCourt School of Public Policy. The center is an independent, nonpartisan policy and research center that aims to expand and improve on high-quality, affordable health care coverage for children and families. Joan's going to talk about the report and the possible impact the proposed work requirement will have on South Carolina families. Sue Berkowitz will follow up. She's the director of the South Carolina Appleseed Legal Justice Center, which works with policymakers to make sure the law is fair and to educate the public and their advocates about the law. She's going to talk about give us the lay of the land in South Carolina. And then Dr. Deborah Greenhouse will follow up. She's a pediatrician in Columbia and a member of the American Academy of Pediatrics and the past president of AAP's South Carolina chapter. She's going to talk about what this looks like for the families she works with. And then we'll open it up to questions after that. So, Joan, take it away.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Joan Alker, and I'm going to provide a quick overview of the national landscape on Medicaid waivers, and then I'll review the findings of our new report. So on January 11th of this year, the federal CMS, which is the agency that oversees Medicaid, released guidance announcing its intent to approve state proposals to impose a work requirement on Medicaid beneficiaries. Since then, CMS has approved four waivers to do so, Kentucky, Indiana, Arkansas, and New Hampshire. But it's worth noting that all four of these states have accepted the Affordable Care Act Medicaid funding to expand their Medicaid program to adults below 138% of the federal poverty line. CMS has yet to respond to a request to impose a work requirement from a state like South Carolina that has not expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. In states that have not expanded Medicaid under the ACA, these proposals will only impact families with children. And these families with children are some of the most vulnerable in the states with extremely low incomes. So when you hear this proposal talked about very infrequently, is it mentioned that parents and families with children are the intended targets. So let's talk for a minute about what South Carolina is proposing to do. And we are certainly still missing some critical details. But basically, the state seeks to impose a work or community service requirement of at least 80 hours per month on parents whose income is at or below 67% of the federal poverty line. These are families whose income is no more than $1,160 a month for a family of three. Excuse me, there is a vague exemption in the proposal for a parent caring for a disabled adult or a child, but it's not clear what that means. The new policy proposes that Medicaid eligibility will be contingent on complying with this new requirement. In other words, if a parent doesn't receive an exemption or appears not to comply or fails to file the needed paperwork, they will lose their Medicaid coverage. The stated goal of the state's policy is to help families rise out of poverty and achieve independence. This is certainly a worthy goal. However, we believe the proposed policy will not achieve this goal. In fact, it is more likely to have the opposite effect by taking away health coverage from very vulnerable families, exposing these families to more financial risk and poorer health. The proposal will do nothing to ensure that barriers to employment, such as childcare, transportation, and lack of available jobs will be addressed. Indeed, the federal government has been very clear that no new funding is available to address these barriers through these Medicaid waivers. The state asserts that a large number of parents, 180,000 parents and adults, will be subject to the new rules and must either receive an exemption or comply with a new work requirement or lose Medicaid. This will likely require significant and costly investments in the state's IT system, which already faces challenges handling current Medicaid eligibility demands. South Carolina is currently processing only 18% of its applications online. That is a rate significantly lower than the national average of 50%. The state's proposal lacks important details like how many parents can be expected to lose coverage. However, the history of work requirements in the TANF program and estimates from other states pursuing a work requirement suggest that thousands will lose coverage. So let's turn now to who are these families. Our analysis found that the vast majority are mothers, 85%, and 37% are young parents under age 30. They are more likely to live in rural areas and small towns. About half of these parents, 46%, are not in the workforce because they're caring for a child or someone with a disability. Only 22% describe themselves as unemployed. The remainder are already reporting some work. Another important fact to keep in mind is that this new policy, if implemented, is likely to disproportionately harm rural areas and small towns of South Carolina, because adults and children in these areas are more likely to be enrolled in Medicaid than their urban counterparts in South Carolina, and because unemployment rates are higher there. 9 of the 11 counties in South Carolina with the highest unemployment rates in 2017 were rural counties. A study we conducted last year with the University of North Carolina found that 17% of adults in rural areas and small towns of South Carolina are enrolled in Medicaid, as compared to just 12% of adults in urban areas. So when we crosswalk these two facts, we find that the following counties have an even higher percent for rural counties, higher than 17% of their adults enrolled in Medicaid, and also had high unemployment rates. So I'm going to read those counties to you. Allendale County, Bamberg County, Barnwell County, Clarendon, Lee, Marion, Marlborough, Orangeburg, and Williamsburg. So the county data is not in our report, but we have it available to you if you'd like to contact us, and we have the Medicaid county data on our website. The last point I want to be making today is that children will also be harmed if their parents lose coverage. Research is clear that being uninsured raises the risk for parents and children to not be able to access the health services they need. Children are at risk for three key reasons. As their parents become uninsured, the entire family is at risk for medical debt and even bankruptcy, moving these families in the opposite direction of economic self-sufficiency. Families at this low-income level already experience very high levels of homelessness and residential instability, as well as higher rates of health problems. Secondly, a healthier parent is a better parent. For example, Medicaid has been shown clearly to reduce the incidence of depression, and maternal depression is epidemic among very low-income women. This inhibits parent-child bonding in the critical early years of development. As parents become uninsured, research is clear that children are also more likely not to have coverage as well. An insured parent almost never has an uninsured child, but a parent who is uninsured raises the odds that the child, too, will be uninsured. In recent years, South Carolina has made very significant progress in reducing the rate of uninsured children to just 4% in the state. This compares to 4.5% nationwide. This proposed new policy threatens that progress. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to Sue Berkowitz.
Thank you, Joan, and I want to thank Georgetown for all their hard work and help on getting to this data and releasing of the report. I'm Sue Berkowitz. I'm with South Carolina Appleseed, and we're a policy advocacy organization here in the state. And I'm very concerned with the discussions that are now going forward with South Carolina trying to tie policy to health care. This is absolutely the wrong direction for our state, especially, as Joan pointed out, for our rural counties. We rarely have the opportunity to brag on our state that we're at the top of a good list. And I'm sure many of you have heard it said here by many people that we're at the top of the bad list and at the bottom of the good list. And for covering children, we've been able to show that we've made incredible progress and we're at the top of that list. And to go backwards at this time seems incredible to me. The counties that Joan read off as far as high unemployment counties as well as having higher Medicaid rates are not surprising. And in addition, we know that there are 22 states where we 22 counties in our state where we have what is called a labor surplus, meaning there are more people out there looking for work than there are jobs available. And none of this has been taken into account when looking at our SNAP policies. And I think that to not take this into account when we're looking at our health care policies, especially for parents, is absolutely a bad direction, and the motivation, it to me seems absolutely cruel. As an attorney, I'm concerned that we're looking at a mandatory population, which is our low-income family population, and trying to get a waiver to not automatically serve them like we're doing right now. We know that employed parents, we know that parents with health care will do better for their children, but also will do better for their employers. We have a real concern that this is going to make us go backwards in forcing people to utilize the emergency rooms. It'll also make them unhealthy and will hurt the progress that our state continues to try to make in helping folks stay employed. I'm also concerned that, especially in these rural counties, if we're going to tie it to some kind of public service with nonprofits, that these opportunities, one, are not necessarily available, and our nonprofit communities could never absorb them. The process would appear to be further along than I think we are right now. I know we're seeing lots of public discussion about this. It's being made, unfortunately, a political issue. The agency did report out at their last Medical Care Advisory Committee meeting, along with a different waiver, that they are starting to look at this as a policy. I would always encourage all of you to look to see what's being reported at the Medical Care Advisory Committee, because that is often policy directives that are going to be going forward for our state, and that's done by the Medicaid agency. At this point, they do have this policy paper that leaves so many questions unanswered, but we are hearing that while the process is moving forward, and it might be moving forward a little bit slower than we initially anticipated, it is moving forward. And with so many of the questions unanswered, I am concerned that any waiver could be submitted to the federal government without these questions being answered, and then really bad policy decisions could be made to fill this in that will be detrimental to low-income families and ultimately have a horrible impact on the children we've made so much progress with. And with that, I believe Dr. Greenhouse is going to be going next.
Yes, so I'm Deborah Greenhouse. I'm a pediatrician in Columbia, South Carolina, and I'm also a past president of the South Carolina chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. About 40% of my patients access their health insurance coverage through Medicaid. That closely mirrors the percentage of children in our state and across the country who rely on the Medicaid program. I see children with complex special health care needs, children from low-income families who face ongoing adversity and challenges, and children from our rural areas whose families drive up to 2 hours to receive the health care they need. We screen our patients for socioeconomic risk factors, so I can tell you that many of my patients and families with Medicaid also struggle with food insecurity, lack of transportation, and lack of access to safe housing. Adding barriers to Medicaid coverage for the poorest of these families would simply be placing one more stumbling block in their path, one that they likely wouldn't be able to overcome. I can tell you firsthand that Medicaid is a lifeline for these children and for their parents. Any proposals that create barriers to Medicaid coverage, such as the proposal under consideration in our state to require parents to prove that they are that they're working a certain number of hours to avoid losing their health insurance coverage, would have serious consequences for my patient's health and for their parents' health. I frequently encounter new moms dealing with mental health issues such as postpartum depression. A mom with Medicaid coverage has access to treatment for her postpartum depression, a mom without Medicaid will likely continue to suffer from depression. That can affect her ability to bond with her child and can result in long-lasting negative consequences both for the parent and for the child. Similarly, parents with a chronic illness, such as diabetes or asthma, who don't have Medicaid are likely to have more frequent exacerbations of their illness. These parents are likely to end up with frequent emergency room visits and possibly hospital admissions because they have no other access to health care. Not only will they be unable to work because of their uncontrolled illness, but the frequent emergency room visits and hospital stays are likely to actually cost the state more money rather than saving it. When parents have health insurance, their children are more likely to be insured as well. If their parents lose their health coverage, children are at greater risk of becoming uninsured. We have achieved historic rates with children's health insurance coverage, with 96% of children in South Carolina currently having coverage. We need to build on this important progress, not to tear it down. If the proposal under consideration is enacted, South Carolina's children and families will bear the burden of it. Children are not just little adults. They have unique health care needs that require unique care. Children enrolled in Medicaid are guaranteed benefits that cover a wide array of services like developmental, vision, and hearing screening. Currently, Medicaid in South Carolina is only offered to parents with extremely low incomes who are already struggling to make ends meet. In fact, a parent with one child making more than $850 per month earns too much to qualify for Medicaid. Many of these parents are already doing everything they can just to put food on the table. The last thing that they should have to worry about is whether they'll have to jump through more unnecessary administrative hoops to continue to afford health care for their children and themselves. When parents can't access health care, it can impact their ability to actively support and nurture their children's healthy development. If the parents lose their health care coverage, it adds one more layer of adversity to the ongoing challenge these families already face. And we have proven adequately that ongoing adversity to a child creates lasting problems and health care problems into adulthood. Medicaid helps to set children up for lifelong success. Children enrolled in Medicaid miss fewer school days due to illness or injury than uninsured children. They perform better in school. They're more likely to graduate high school. They're more likely to attend college than their uninsured peers. And they eventually earn higher wages, all things that are good for South Carolina. I urge the state to halt its plan to impose additional barriers to access in the Medicaid program. As pediatricians, we do everything in our power to ensure children can grow up healthy, and we recognize the critical role that Medicaid plays in making that possible. It's our responsibility to ensure that they have access to health care coverage that works for them. We have to keep Medicaid strong for South Carolina's children and for its families. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Dr. Greenhouse. Do we have any questions?
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone telephone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. And we'll pause for a moment to allow questions to queue.
So we've got a couple coming in. I want to quickly just note, for the reporters on the call, that these Section 1115 waivers are required to go through a public process that would include public comment at the state level, a 30-day comment period, as well as at the federal level, an additional 30-day comment period. So if this proposal moves forward, we would expect to see those public comment periods. So I think we have a couple questions.
And we do. We'll take our first question from Mayan Schechter with the State Newspaper. Your line is open.
Thank you so much. I was just hoping that you could go back over the number of Medicaid patients who would be greatly affected by this waiver.
Well, so that's a good question. The state itself in the concept paper says that 180,000 adults would be affected. As we understand it, because of who the state could apply this to, those would be all parents or caretaker relatives, primarily parents. And so that's the group that we looked at with respect to the numbers I gave you in terms of what percent are mothers, 85% being mothers, et cetera. So it's hard to know how many of those 180,000 people would be exempt due to the kinds of exemptions the state mentions. They're not super clear about that. And that's one of the very important questions to ask the state themselves. Not only how many would be affected, but how many would lose their coverage. The state is going to have to come up with an estimate before they submit their proposal of how this would impact enrollment and spending as well. So, but 180,000 is a very large group to apply this policy to, and that's what the state says. Do you want to add anything, Sue?
Well, we know that there's 630,000 of the 1.2 million people, our children on Medicaid, and another substantial portion of that population, of course, are the SSI and disabled individuals. I am still trying to figure out where that number, the actual number, came up. I think we have to remember that South Carolina, when we went to block granting of our TANF program, we have very few people who are actually on what we would call TANF or Family Independence Welfare who are also getting Medicaid because of the because of being on it as an automatic category. It's really hard to know how many of those folks are not already working and, you know, what number of those folks are primary caretakers, don't have, what kind of exemptions they're going to have. So it's going to take the agency a lot more work to explain to all of us where they're coming up with that kind of a number.
And I'll just quickly add to that, I think the other point that Dr. Greenhouse and I were making is that even though children are technically exempt from this proposal, as one would certainly hope to see for a work requirement, children will be impacted as well. And as Sue just mentioned, there are about 630,000 children on South Carolina's Medicaid program. And those that fall below the 67% of poverty level, those are the neediest families, most vulnerable families. Those are the children that would potentially be affected by the secondary impacts that we talked about. Any other comments, or should we go to the next question?
Yeah, I'm done. Thank you, though.
And as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question today, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. We'll go next to Lauren Sasser with the Post and Courier. Your line is open.
Hi. Y'all mentioned at the beginning of the call that the four states whose waivers had been approved had all expanded the program. Have any of the non-expansion states applied for a waiver, and does it seem likely that their proposals will be approved?
So this is Joan Alker. I can respond to that. So a couple have. It's sort of a complex situation, but there are two states, Maine and Mississippi, that at least at the time that Maine applied, they had not technically expanded. Maine,
mm-hmm.
There's been litigation, so they are expanding. So I kind of leave Maine aside.
Okay.
So really, the only state that has not expanded Medicaid that has a pending application that has gone through the process I described with the state mm-hmm. public comment and the federal public comment is Mississippi. That is pending.
Okay.
Now, Alabama has a proposal which has gone through the state public comment process. They were overwhelmed with hundreds and hundreds of comments in opposition to this proposal, and that has slowed them down. So they have not completed their application yet. And then Oklahoma, we're expecting, and Tennessee possibly as well. But I will say that CMS, Administrator Seema Verma has indicated that CMS does have some concerns about these schools from non-expansion states, particularly in reference to Mississippi, which, as I said, just has already submitted. Their eligibility is so low that these families face a catch-22. If they comply with the work requirement, they're going to be over income eligibility.
Right.
They're going to lose their Medicaid, and if they don't, they're going to lose their Medicaid, too. So
I imagine that would be the same here.
Well, it's your eligibility level is a little bit higher, but you do face a situation where families that go over the income eligibility, 67%, but are below the poverty line, are likely going to be uninsured because they're not eligible for marketplace subsidies until they get to the poverty line. So it's a slightly different problem, but it's also a big problem, which is that if these parents do increase their work hours, see more earnings, they're going to become uninsured because the likelihood, and this is a stat we have in the report, the likelihood of a worker below poverty getting health insurance through their job is very small. Those employers tend not to offer affordable coverage, and only 21% of South Carolina residents living in poverty receive employer-sponsored insurance. So you just can't rely on that. So that is another among one of many fatal flaws with these proposals is that a parent could comply and find themselves uninsured.
Okay. And Joan, this is Sue. I would just like to add that, and that's something that we're seeing when we hear from low-wage workers, is that they're not able to get Medicaid now, whether it's a parent who's over the 67% threshold or for single adults, and they're not going into jobs that have employers that are offering health insurance. And so when we look at our gap because of not expanding, this is exactly the population that we're seeing falling through those cracks. And while many of them are right now adults, what we don't want to do is see families falling into this crack as well and finding themselves uninsured.
Thank you.
And once again, to ask a question today, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone, and we'll pause for a moment to allow any further questions to queue. And I'm showing we have no further questions at this time. I'll turn the call back for any further or closing remarks today.
So I want to thank everybody for joining us. Sue or Dr. Greenhouse, do you have any closing remarks?
This is Dr. Greenhouse. I think I would just say that what we need to be stressing here is that this impacts entire families, that what happens to a parent impacts what happens to the child. So we can't look at this with blinders on. We have to look at the overall impact. There are certain things that we do well in South Carolina. As a pediatrician practicing here, I can honestly say that the services that we provide for children with Medicaid are very good services, that we do a really nice job of making sure that our kids get the care they need, they get the screenings that they need, that we're providing them with their best shot to grow up healthy, to grow up secure. But that's absolutely contingent on the parents being able to provide what they need to provide. If we throw these parents off the cliff and we force them to go uninsured, then the whole house of cards just falls down, and it is a house of cards. It's got to have a base to it. If the parents lose their access to health care, that's the end of the game. The cards fall down, the children are more likely to be uninsured, you've just got more stresses in the household altogether. It just doesn't work anymore. So we've got to provide those very basic services, particularly for the folks who are the most vulnerable, and that's who we're talking about, the most vulnerable residents of South Carolina.
Absolutely.
This is Sue. I just want to say thank you, Dr. Greenhouse. I couldn't have said it more eloquently. I mean, South Carolina has not been taking care of our low-income families, and we've made such progress with our children, and at least in the healthcare arena, making sure they have coverage. We have a housing shortage. We have wage gaps. We have so many ways that we can work to improve the lives of low-income families, and then that's improving the lives of our children so that we can improve as a state. This is a step backward instead of a step forward.
Well, thank you to you both, and thanks to all of the reporters who joined us. Please just let us know if you have follow-up questions, and that will conclude our call today.